Animals Today, your home for serious talk about animals. I'm Dr. Lori Kirshner. A few days ago, we learned about new troubles at the Del Mar Racetrack, where they have recently installed a new turf surface on one of their tracks. Now, since July 17th, reports say that at least a half a dozen horses have broken down and require euthanasia. Now, there's a lot of banter about the new surface, but to what extent can these deaths be attributed to that? And how dangerous is racing to its participants? To answer these questions and more, I'm pleased to welcome Patrick Battuello, who writes the great blog Horse Racing Wrongs. He has been writing on animal rights issues since 2009, when he launched the animal rights blog for the Albany Times Union, the first of its kind on a local mainstream media forum. He's also written for the Albany and National Examiner and PETA. Patrick's horse racing work has been included in congressional testimony and as background for a well-known network's piece on breakdowns. Patrick is currently a board member for the New York State Humane Association. Welcome to the program, Patrick.
Thank you, Lori.
Just to get us going, what happened in Del Mar? Did I get the basic facts correct?
You did. The problem is they're in damage control mode. They've lost actually 10 horses since the meet began on July 17th. And while not coming out and saying that it was the turf, the newly installed turf track, that caused roughly half of those deaths, they need to do something to assuage the damage, and so they canceled racing on the turf for a few days to attend to it. But again, the problem is that only accounts for half. There's been a couple horses that have just dropped dead. They call them cardiovascular events. 2-3-year-old horses, which are roughly the equivalent of human children. So again, with horse racing, we can get into this. They're constantly trying to deflect and distract. The problem is horses are dying, have always died on the racetrack, and will continue to die regardless of what they do to try to counter these problems.
So it may not have been the turf.
It's very well possible that it, I mean, my guess, I'm not an expert on track surfaces, but they've hit a bad patch here, Del Mar, and, it's one of the premier meets during the season, and, this is very bad publicity for them. So they need to have a scapegoat, and, again, while not coming out and saying it's our track, that's what they're steering, where they're steering the attention. But again, this is happening all over the country every single day, and it's what I document on the website. Horses are dying every single day. It doesn't matter whether it's dirt, turf, polytrack, which is on the way out. It doesn't matter what they do, the horses are dying.
Right, so it's not unusual to have an occurrence like this where you have a cluster of injuries.
I would say that in this particular case, it may be. I mean, they ran into a problem a few years back, I think, where they lost over 20 horses during the meet. And then last year it was down. So, it comes and goes in waves. So, I think it's reasonable to say that 10 horses in this short span at Del Mar, which, again, are usually the higher-tier horses, is unusual. But I'm not going to say it's because of the turf. This is happening on all surfaces, to all kinds of horses. The cheap ones, the expensive ones, they're breaking down on a regular basis, and horse racing has no answer.
Patrick, what does it mean for a horse to break down?
Well, that's a good question, Lori. When I started doing this, and the reason I did it was, everyone is aware of, most people are aware of the New York Times statistic of 24 dead a week. But even by their admission, that's a conservative number. So I wanted to delve a little bit deeper and to find out, whether this is a fair reckoning. And so I started reviewing the charts every single morning. Equibase releases charts for every race run in America the day before thoroughbred and quarter horse. And in the charts, they'll give notes basically stating how a horse fares you know, during that race, mundane stuff mostly. But the bad stuff, they use, for the most part, keywords. Very rarely will they say a horse is euthanized on track. There's a couple tracks that I have found that do report them as euthanized. But most of the time, whoever writes the charts for that particular track uses euphemisms like broke down and vanned off. Broke down, for your listeners, almost without exception, means dead. It's a euphemism for dead. And anyone with the work and knowledge of horse racing understands it as such. But I began calling racetracks to try to get confirmations on horses that were listed as broke down. And as you can imagine, I was stonewalled, or I am stonewalled quite a bit of the time. But just for context, every single time I have received an answer as to whether a broke down horse was euthanized, the answer has been yes. So as far as I'm concerned, when they list a horse as broke down, he died. The vanned off is a little trickier. It's less definitive, but basically a horse that cannot walk off the track under his own power, who has to take an ambulance ride, that's a bad omen. And I've had two experts tell me independently that they believe up to 90% of the horses that are vanned off end up dead back in the barn or shortly thereafter. And again, I started doing updates on 6-month updates on horses that I originally reported as vanned off to see where they are today. And I have found that roughly 75 to 90% of those horses that were listed as vanned off, which sounds innocuous, you know, it's an ambulance ride, you know, football players are carted off the field occasionally. You know, but again, to people in the know, they understand that's bad.
Right.
I found that 75 to 90% of those horses have not been heard from since. They just vanished from the charts. So racing's not going to come out and tell you that they're dead, because dead horses are bad for business. But, again, what I found through my numbers is that I think it's closer to 2,000 horses a year are dying on American racetracks rather than what the Times reports, which, again, is about 24 a week. You know, and again, I think 2,000 may be even conservative.
Right.
But given right. that this is, an animal rights program, you know, the larger, it really doesn't matter whether it's 2,000 or 1,200. You know, one dead horse is too much. But I wanted to further expose this industry for the corrupt business that it is. And, it starts right from the beginning by calling itself the sport of kings. And, you know, I'd be glad to get into that, you know, what I call the big lie, horse racing being called the sport, if you'd like. I don't know if you had any follow-up on the broke down or vanned off.
Yes. Well, no, that's very good. Thank you for explaining all that. Yeah, you're not going to expect injured horses nursed back to health and live the rest of their natural lives in pastures with good food and lots of attention. So obviously this is the fact. So talk about briefly the use of drugs in horse racing. What is used and why, and what is legal and not?
Well, Laurie, to answer your question, there are legal and illegal drugs. A few years back, horse racing made all anabolic steroids illegal, but the illegal ones that they're still giving horses, pain medication, anti-inflammatories, are being abused without question. Horses are running with injuries, and they don't feel them. So the inflammation, which is usually assigned to the body to stop doing what you're doing and to rest, is going to be ignored, you know, through this medication, and that does cause breakdowns. The other drug that is very controversial is Lasix. It's a race day medication. It's a diuretic, and its intended purpose is to control pulmonary bleeding in racehorses. The United States and Canada are the only two states to allow race day medication, and nearly every horse in America runs on Lasix. The problem is twofold. One, Lasix is a diuretic, so it's a massive loss of water weight. So horses do run faster, theoretically, with the Lasix, and there have been studies done that show that it is a performance enhancer. And two, it possibly could act as a system flush, masking other drugs that are not legal for race day. So there's been a push within the industry to eliminate Lasix because it is so controversial. But again, the people that defend Lasix are saying that it's a therapeutic medication for horses, in that it controls pulmonary bleeding. And my response to that is, if a horse is bleeding naturally, you know, because he's being forced to run 30 to 35 miles an hour, then should he be doing that at all? And no other sport on the planet has a physical, you know, the physical motion causes, the primary physical motion causes pain and suffering.
Patrick Batuello, we're learning about horse racing industry. Don't go away. You're listening to Animals Today. This is Dr. Lori Kirshner, and I want to thank you for joining us on Animals Today. Each week, we explore the wide variety of important issues concerning the welfare of animals, how people treat them, and where they fit in our society. From whale protectors on the open seas, to lawyers in court, to scouts helping their local shelter, join me to get the latest on animal welfare news, stories, and events from around the world. And visit us on Facebook to join the conversation. That's Animals Today every week, right here on the station, 5 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Also, make sure to visit us at animalstodayradio.com, where you can listen to any of our previous shows free. Animals Today brings you the highest quality, most up-to-date information about all animal welfare topics. Much of our support comes from the nonprofit group Advancing the Interests of Animals. Check them out at aianimals.org. That's aianimals.org. And thanks for listening.
Every day in the United States, tens of thousands of puppies and kittens are born. Unfortunately, there aren't enough homes for all these cats and dogs. One unfixed female cat and her offspring can be the source of more than 400,000 cats in 7 years. One female dog and her unfixed offspring can produce about 67,000 puppies. Too many cats and dogs are unwanted anywhere by anybody, so they end up being neglected or abandoned. Millions of healthy pets are killed in shelters annually in the U.S. On average, 70% of the animals that enter the shelter end up getting euthanized. Fortunately, there is good news. There's a new answer to this dilemma. We can help to stop killing these animals by having our pets spayed or neutered. If you want a new pet, how about adopting one? You can rescue a cat or dog and save a life.
This message is sponsored by Advancing the Interests of Animals. You can check them out at aianimals.org. That's the letter A, I, animals.org.
Little Jack Horner sat in a corner of his ransacked apartment, wondering what kind of nitwit steals a futon. Luckily, the Geico Insurance Agency had helped him with renter's insurance, and he got full replacement. Unfortunately, little Jack Horner had to have his stomach pumped when he ate a six-month-old Christmas pie. Visit Geico.com to see how affordable renter's insurance can be.
Safety, safety, safety. I'm saying it three times. Studies show you need to hear something three times to remember it. So remember, safety, safety, safety is important to me, me, me. That's why I love Grainger. Grainger has the products to help keep our facilities safe and people safer. Say it with me, kid. Safety, safety, safety from Grainger, Grainger, Grainger. When you think safety, think Grainger. Get it? Got it? Good. Call clickgrainger.com/safety or stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Does the economy lows and the stock market volatility have you concerned about your ability to invest for retirement? Did you know that you can diversify part or all your retirement into more secure and potentially more lucrative investments? iDirect can show you how to buy real estate, tax liens, and more inside your IRA or 401k rollover. The investment opportunities are really limitless. You don't need to be at the mercy of the stock market with your IRA or 401k. You have options. Call now to learn more about buying alternative investments inside your retirement plan. To get the most value for this investment, you must have $25,000 in rollable retirement funds. Call iDirect now and get the info packet on self-directed IRA investing. 877-278-1030. 877-278-1030. 877-278-1030. That's 877-278-1030.
back. We're speaking to Patrick Bacciuolo. He writes the blog called HorseRacingWrongs.com. Patrick, does the general public have an appreciation of all aspects of the horse racing industry?
They definitely don't, Lori. And this is a concerted effort on the part of the horse racing industry. They've been trying since the beginning of time to portray what they do as a sport, when in fact it's just an antiquated gambling game. Again, if horse racing is a sport, then that word must be redefined, for it resembles no other sport on the planet. The young horses, children, are torn from their mothers to begin intensive training at 1-2 years old, and that starts long before muscles and bones are even remotely mature. The athletes, the so-called athletes, are confined to small stalls 23 hours a day for their entire careers, making a mockery of the claim that horses are born to run and love to run. The athletes are bought, sold, traded, and dumped, literally. The athletes are drugged and doped without consent. The athletes are whipped for motivation. The athletes are regularly dying on the playing field. And finally, most of the retired athletes are shackled, slashed, bled out, and butchered. That is horse racing. It is not a sport. It's a gambling game, and most people don't understand, to answer your question.
Right.
We live in proximity to Saratoga, and it's one of the elite tracks in the country, and people around here say, well, those horses are pampered. They're treated better than you or I. And when, in fact, that's what they want you to see, that the rubdowns and the constant attention. Those horses that are running up in Saratoga today, eventually most of them will start to descend into the claiming ranks, which makes up about 70% of American horse racing. And claiming races are where most of the breakdowns occur. These horses in a claiming race are all for sale at a set price before the race begins, so they're constantly being shuffled between owners and trainers, and they basically run them into the ground until they have nothing left to give. And most people don't understand that. They look at the Triple Crown races, the Breeders' Cup, they see meets like Saratoga, and that's what is in the public eye, not what's happening with the doping and the breakdowns and the slaughter. There has been more attention, focused on it in recent years, which is good. And that's all I'm trying to do here, is to shed even more light on it. And everyone that I explain what's happening to, they say, I had no idea that, five or six horses were dying on American tracks every day. And it should give people pause. Anyone that goes up to Saratoga, for an occasional visit, should rethink, what they're doing. That this is an unnecessary activity. There's no defense for it. I mean, horses are being exploited, they're being abused, and they're dying. And that's all I'm trying to convey to the general public.
Thank you so much for going into such great detail about the cruelties of the horse racing industry. Patrick, talk about the business of racing and racinos.
Sure. Horse racing 50 years ago was the only legal gambling game in town. That has changed dramatically, as you know, with state lotteries and Indian casinos, and then full service casinos. Here in New York State, we passed a referendum last fall that allows for 7 new full service casinos to be built in New York. This is bad for horse racing. It's competition. And what we're finding is that the younger generations aren't interested in learning how to handicap a horse race. So they're hurting. And what they did within the last 10 to 15 years is, state by state, currently about 18 of the 30-odd states that run racing have some form of racino. And a racino is a combination racetrack casino. Most of the racinos offer video lottery terminals or slot machines. Some offer table games like poker. And the relationship is this. If a racino opens up on an existing racetrack, that racetrack has to funnel, or whoever owns the racetrack has to funnel, some of the proceeds from the racino into horse racing through into higher purses and to breeding incentives. So basically, what we know, and this is not my opinion, this is fact, and if you go on my website and you go on to, there's a category called Racinos, what we know is that horse racing, much of horse racing, cannot subsist on product alone any longer. They cannot subsist on the betting and the attendance. They will not survive. Almost all harness racing would have been would be dead or dying by now if not for Racinos, and a lot of the smaller, not smaller tracks, but the cheaper tracks, you know, tracks like Charlestown in West Virginia and Parks in Pennsylvania, Thistledown in Ohio, Aqueduct here in New York State. These tracks are only still around because of these slot machines. And now what we're finding is that the track owners, the people that own the premises, would rather just go with casino gaming. It's popular, but they are obligated through state laws. You know, that vary from state to state, but basically the gist is that in order for them to get a license to have video lottery terminals or table games, they have to continue to race horses on their property, and they also have to funnel, you know, as I mentioned, funnel profits into the horse racing industry. So it's a corrupt relationship. It's a subsidy. I call it corporate welfare because that's exactly what it is. The industry, the horse racing industry, likes to call it a relationship, a business relationship or partnership between state and industry. That's not true. It's an obsolete business, and it should be allowed to die just like so many other industries, you know, from the 19th and 20th century that became obsolete. And so the bottom line here is almost all harness racing in America and a good deal of the thoroughbred tracks would be being read last rites at this point if not for this Racino subsidy that they're getting. And, of course, the horsemen love it. I mean, they're laughing all the way to the bank. And
Patrick, what can we do to end horse racing?
I think it's twofold. You know, again, this is not to tout my site, but it should be spread far and wide because no one else is doing what I'm doing on a daily basis, and that's documenting, you know, the dead horses. People, it's education. Just make people aware that horses are dying for $2 bets. That's number one. Number two is to lobby, you know, your state legislatures. And, you know, if you're in a state that has, you know, Racinos, and again, there's about 18 or so right now, you know, tell them this is not what we want, you know, state-sponsored gambling to benefit. We want it to go to education like it was supposed to, rather than lining horsemen's pockets. So if we can eliminate these subsidies, horse racing will start to die a natural death. A lot of horse racing. I shouldn't say not all of it. There's obviously going to be tracks like Saratoga and Santa Anita, Churchill Downs that aren't going anywhere anytime soon. But a good deal of it will die if they get the spigot shut off. But also people that just occasionally bet are educated and told that, look, this is what your bet is doing. You know, please stop.
Patrick Batchuelo, thank you so much.
Okay. Thank you, Lori.
Hi, this is Dr. Lori Kirshner from the animal welfare organization Advancing the Interests of Animals. Do you ever wonder what you can do to be nicer to animals or to help them? Here are a few things you can do to show your appreciation to our furry friends. You could donate to or volunteer at your local animal shelter. Walking the dogs and playing with the cats is a meaningful way to make a difference in the lives of homeless animals. You could be a foster parent. If you have the extra time and space, becoming a foster parent is a wonderful way to take some of the burden off our overcrowded shelters by giving an animal a loving place to live until their forever home is found. Increase your appreciation for wildlife by providing a welcoming space for butterflies, hummingbirds, and other creatures, or by simply driving cautiously through areas populated by wild animals such as deer. You are acting with compassion. These are only a few ideas to encourage you to continue thinking about your personal kindness towards animals. This message is sponsored by Advancing the Interests of Animals. Please visit us online at AIAnimals.com. IRS.org.
Owe $10,000 or more to the IRS that you can't pay? Call now for immediate help. 866-657-8517. At Community Tax Relief, we help consumers like you. If you take on the IRS alone, you could be facing levies, liens, even wage garnishments, personal or business tax issues. If you owe the IRS $10,000 or more, they will aggressively come after you. Protect yourself and your family today from what the IRS can do to you. Call now, 866-657-8517. They can freeze your bank account, even garnish your wages. Our expert team of tax professionals can solve your tax problems once and for all. Call now for a free 5-minute tax debt analysis. 866-657-8517. 866-657-8517. 866-657-8517.
This alert just came in. This special announcement is for business owners and leaders of organizations who've been waiting for the right time to build. General Steel has made it impossible to wait any longer with rock-bottom prices that could save you thousands. That's right. General Steel, America's leader in pre-engineered structures, is offering buildings at prices you will never see again. Don't miss these prices. A 50 by 100 for under $30,000. You heard right. That's 5,000 square feet under $30,000. Manufacturers, if you need a larger building, try a 100 by 100 commercial building for $129,000. You can't afford to rent with these prices. Imagine a 70 by 100 foot church building for under $69,000. With the economy improving and interest rates still at historic lows, you can't afford to wait.
Call 800-605-5370. 800-605-5370. Call 800-605-5370.
Wow, Geico's been saving people money for over 75 years?
75 years? Fancy that.
My dearest wife, do you possess knowledge about Geico, making it feasible for society to spend less capital on automobile insurance for over 75 years?
Why are you talking like that?
You said fancy that, so I was just fancying it.
Geico, saving people money on car insurance for over 75 years.
Look, kid, when guys like us walk into a facility in the morning, we can smell a problem. No one needs to hand us a work order. We already know it. Today, for instance, we need a new gearbox, 6 globe valves, and a dozen ballasts. And when I smell a problem, Granger smells that I smell a problem. They help me keep this place up and running. Now that's the kind of smell I like. The sweet smell of success. Get it? Got it? Good. Call, click Granger.com, or stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
Due to an upturn in the economy, Main Street Business Loans has pre-approved the release of millions of dollars in small business funding. Your business may already be pre-approved to receive up to $250,000. We've sent out millions of pre-approval letters. We see the economy growing, and our underwriters believe now is the time to invest in your business so you can grow faster and make more money. And we're prepared to give you up to $250,000 to do it. Your funds can be available in 5 days. There are no application fees, no annual fees, just quick access to up to $250,000. If your business did not receive your approval letter to get up to $250,000, call Main Street Business Loans Approval Desk now.
800-430-7570. 800-430-7570. 800-430-7570. That's 800-430-7570.
Welcome back to Animals Today. The Ebola outbreak certainly has hit home now that two infected American doctors have been flown to Atlanta for treatment. Another man caused a big scare in New York City when, upon return from West Africa, he developed fever and gastrointestinal problems. He was placed in isolation in Mount Sinai Hospital. Unfortunately, the CDC reported his test negative for Ebola. Now, the reason we're interested in Ebola at animals today is its connection with animals, and the emerging story is pretty intriguing. I'm very pleased to welcome David Sanders, who is Associate Professor of Biological Sciences at Purdue University, where his research is focused on various aspects of Ebola. Welcome to the program, David.
Thank you very much. Glad to be here.
David, what is Ebola, and how does it make us sick and cause death?
So Ebola is a member of a family called filoviruses. They're vaguely related to rhabdoviruses, rabies viruses, distantly related. They cause disease by being introduced into a patient by contact with fluids that are contaminated, and the actual disease is almost certainly caused by the immune system's reaction to the virus rather than the virus itself. So the tissue damage and the inability to coagulate the blood, which is one of the symptoms of Ebola virus, that's all the immune system's reaction to the presence of the viral infection rather than the viral infection causing the damage directly itself.
I see. Now, you made a comment that this is spread through body fluids, obviously placing healthcare workers at grave risk. But I read an article claiming it could be spread through a handshake. Is that correct, David?
Well, there is some evidence that the virus is present in sweat. So that is a fluid. So when we include fluids, we are talking about blood. We're talking about semen. We are talking about sweat. We are talking about spit. So any of those can potentially be contaminated with the virus.
And, David, how are animals involved in the Ebola picture?
It's a great question. So it is commonly believed that fruit bats are the host for Ebola virus, the natural host for Ebola virus. So this requires a little bit of explanation. The first thing is that people normally think of viruses as dangerous and harmful and so on. But in their natural hosts, they cause little or no harm. They are adapted to the immune system, and the immune system is adapted to them, and there's an equilibrium. So in the fruit bats, it apparently causes no overt symptoms. And the case is very strong for the idea that fruit bats are the natural host of a closely related filovirus called Marburg virus. The evidence for Ebola is less strong, but still fairly compelling. And the idea is that it either goes directly from the bats to humans, someone comes into contact with an infected bat, or, and this seems to be, at least in the past, more likely to have occurred, that it went through the intermediary of a non-humane primate, and the bushmeat trade introduced the virus into the human population. But either route is certainly a possibility for this particular outbreak.
How about birds or insects? Can they act as hosts?
That's a great question. So our own research has demonstrated that the entry of the Ebola virus into cells is structurally and biochemically most similar to the entry of bird retroviruses into cells. And so this is a very strong evolutionary argument that Ebola and the bird retroviruses, in terms of the entry process, had a comparatively recent common origin. And it suggests that Ebola was at one time associated with birds. Now, we have no evidence that it is currently associated with birds, but birds really haven't been looked at to any great extent as a natural host. There is no evidence for insect infection, though it's actually something that we are looking at in our lab currently.
David, can people be infected and not have the massive immune response that makes them sick?
That's a great question. I just want to point out that the lethality of this virus, depending upon the epidemic, is somewhere between 40% and 80%. In general, nearly everybody does get sick. But there are, it depends upon their individual health status and immune system, depending upon whether that sickness is going to progress to death. But nearly everybody does get sick, but there are some people who are fortunate enough to be able to recover.
What causes an outbreak, and where is Ebola in between epidemics?
Both great questions. So an outbreak requires somebody getting infected. And in this particular case, what's most scary about this case is that the epidemic here is multifocal. So what do I mean by that? That is, it is present in different areas, different geographic areas. And so you, in order to extinguish the epidemic, you have to deal with all of those individual places separately. And it's sort of like a forest fire. If you have one forest fire, you can contain it and surround it. But if you have forest fires all over the place, it's very difficult to contain them all simultaneously. Where does it hide out? It probably circulates, again, in bats, maybe in birds, but I don't, you know, we don't have any direct evidence for current infection of birds. It continues to circulate naturally among them. I mean, we see this in many other types of diseases. If you think about influenza A viruses all originate as aquatic bird viruses, and they circulate in those aquatic birds, ducks, geese, and cause them little or no harm. But occasionally, they're able to hop over into humans, sometimes with the intermediary of pigs, and sometimes directly to humans. So the virus is circulating in its natural host, causing it very little harm because it is adapted to that host. And that's the host that it really wants to be in. Ebola doesn't want to be in a human host. I know this is a little indelicate, but a human or a primate host is not a good host because the virus kills off the host. It's a terminal host. The best host for a virus is one that continues to live and continues to allow for the spread of the virus. So it's these viruses just spread naturally in the native host. This is the same thing with SARS, where we had also a bat host as the most common host for the SARS coronavirus.
Very interesting. David, do you think it was wise to transport the two infected Americans to Emory Hospital for their care?
It's a great question, and I've been asked that quite often. My general opinion is that it was not necessary. We don't really have high-tech treatments for this. I mean, or the ones that we know that are effective for this. And it doesn't really require Western medicine, per se. What it does require is Western containment facilities. This is something that is essential for the epidemic. But, you know, I don't want to second guess. There's, you know, it could be that it was just totally inadequate hospital facilities in that part of Western Africa, and that they needed to bring them to the United States. You know, there's a lot of things. Ebola is bringing up a lot of the best and a lot of the worst in terms of our concern, but also the sensationalism and the potential for panic. So there are lots of things that we can learn from this episode, I think.
Yeah, well stated. And finally, David, could we have an outbreak of Ebola in the U.S.?
So is it possible, and I read somewhere that, you know, the CDC, director of CDC, mentioned that, you know, it's just a matter of time or that it's likely. I'm not sure it's likely here in the United States, and outbreak is an interesting question because we do have Western containment facilities. And that's all that's necessary for containment of Ebola. Ebola is a virus that is spread. You have to come in direct contact with the fluids. And this is opposed to a virus such as influenza, which is spread by a respiratory route, which is much, much harder to contain. So I believe that if there happened to be a case in the United States, we could institute the proper containment very, very readily. So the chance of any American, you know, getting Ebola is infinitesimal. The chance of any individual getting here is extremely small, and the chance of it spreading, when, you know, once a case is identified, is also extremely small, because we do have the capacity to contain it here in the United States.
David Sanders, thank you so much for educating our listeners.
I'm very glad to do it.
As temperatures climb, please remember to never leave your dog in the car, not even for a minute on a warm day with the windows cracked and in the shade. The temperature inside a car can climb up in a matter of minutes, and it's enough to kill your pet. If you love your pet, leave them at home or with someone you trust. Keep them cool, comfortable, and alive. And if you see a dog or other pet in a car, you may only have a moment to save their life. Here are a couple of steps that you should remember. Make an announcement in the store or business the car is parked nearest to, and call the police department or animal control right away. Remember, it only takes a minute or two on a hot day to kill an animal left inside a car. Your swift action can save a life. Dogs are unable to cool themselves the way people can. Never leave your dog in the car, not even for a minute.
This message is sponsored by Advancing the Interests of Animals. You can check them out at AIAnimals.org. That's the letter A, IAnimals.org.
Attention homeowners, I'm Jay Farner, president of Quicken Loans, and I have some important information for you regarding the U.S. government's Home Affordable Refinance Program, or HARP. We've told you about HARP in the past, and more than 3 million homeowners have already taken advantage of this money-saving program. But there are so many more of you who could be saving hundreds of dollars every month on your mortgage. And Quicken Loans is here to help you save your money. The home loan experts at Quicken Loans fully understand the HARP guidelines. If you weren't HARP eligible in the past, new guidelines could mean that now you are. Give us a call and we'll give you a Quicken Loans mortgage review. It's simple and easy. And for 4 years in a row now, J.D. Power has ranked Quicken Loans highest in the nation in customer satisfaction for primary mortgage origination. Call 800-QUICKEN. That's 800-QUICKEN. Or go to quickenloans.com for a mortgage experience that's engineered to amaze.
For J.D. Power award information, visit jdpower.com. Payment example excludes taxes and insurance. Calls for cost information. Equal housing lender license in all 50 states. NMLS number 3030.
What is term life insurance? It's basically a financial protection plan for your family if you pass away. It can be a hard purchase. Think about it. It's one of the few major purchases you can make that you will personally never use. But you've got to have it to protect your family. And you owe it to yourself to shop and compare to get the best possible rates. For term life insurance policies of $500,000 or more, call the Term Lifeline today.
800-957-6068. That's 800-957-6068. Remember, we specialize in term life insurance policies of $500,000 or more, and we have great rates for smokers, too. So call today. 800-957-6068. 800-957-6068. That's 800-957-6068.
Attention students, this is your principal. I'd like to welcome everyone back to the first day of school. Now for a few announcements. Kmart and Sears are giving Shop Your Way members surprise points that are valid until August 13th and can be used to purchase new shoes, jeans, hoodies, and backpacks. Also, will the person who put a live goat in my office please remove it? Now I will hand it over to our school librarian, who will read the legal.
Amount of points awarded based on membership status and other factors. See shopyourway.com for details.
Wow, Geico's been saving people money for over 75 years?
75 years? Fancy that.
My dearest wife, do you possess knowledge about Geico, making it feasible for society to spend less capital on automobile insurance for over 75 years?
Why are you talking like that?
You said fancy that, so I was just fancying it.
Geico, saving people money on car insurance for over 75 years.
If you're struggling to pay or haven't been making your student loan payments, listen carefully to this urgent alert. Have you been out of school for 10 or more years and you're still making your student loan payments? Are your student loans past due or even in default? Can't go back to school because of an old student loan problem? Fast Track Student Loans can get your student loans out of default, stop any wage garnishments, stop collection calls, and stop seizure of your tax refund. Give yourself a break. Stop the stress and get your student loan payments down to as little as $25 a month based on what you can afford to pay. One quick 10-minute call could help you solve your student loan problems. So call right now. Not available in all states. Payments may vary based on income.
800-685-0129. 800-685-0129. 800-685-0129. That's 800-685-0129.
Back to Animals Today. Hi, Peter.
Hey, Laura. How you doing?
Good. What's going on in the news?
Well, a lot of interesting things in Los Angeles, the port of Los Angeles. A gentleman was trying to leave the country with about 30 pieces of stuffed animals, like alligator and a gazelle and a wildebeest, some horns and antlers. He apparently didn't have any permits, didn't really know what he was doing, and all these things were confiscated. He was trying to leave the country with them, which is the opposite direction that the flow usually goes.
Right.
He claims ignorance, was on a sort of a shopping spree, spontaneous spree, and he had just sort of picked up some items, didn't really think about what he was doing.
And what was he going to do with the items?
Well, he was going to go back to his native country in the east, and... They were just little trinkets. Didn't really realize that it's not really legal to export these without the proper permits. You don't know where they came from, whether they're obtained legally.
So, okay, now he knows.
Now he knows. It must have been an interesting scene. But, you know, a lot of it's, well, that's right. You claim ignorance. I guess that's your defense.
Right.
Another sort of ignorant event occurred, unfortunately, in Brazil, where a young boy stuck his arm too close to a tiger enclosure, and he was attacked in a zoo, and ultimately, after a number of surgeries, lost his arm. And the tiger was a 200-kilogram, reportedly docile animal, has been at the facility for more than 2 years. There was a guard watching to make sure the boy didn't, or people didn't get too close, but he was making his rounds at the time of the attack. So.
And where were the parents?
Parents were nearby.
These things happen at zoos all the time.
I know, we do hear about these all the time, and even in the States, a kid falls over, mother wants to show her child to get her closer look and drops a child. We talked about that case.
Yeah, exactly. These are wild animals. They shouldn't be in cage.
So wonder what will happen to the tiger. Father was charged for negligence.
Okay,
and
good.
Released on bail.
Good.
And what do you do? Natural consequence of animals in zoos.
That's right.
People want to get close to them. It's too close. I know. Okay, here's a happier story about animal therapy. So a study just published in the journal Anthrozoos. That is the official journal of the International Society for Anthrozoology. We know about them. It's pretty interesting stuff published there. And they did a retrospective study that looked at the need for oral pain medication in patients following a joint replacement surgery. And they would bring in a dog, a daily visit from a therapy dog with who were specially trained, and the visits were only 5 to 15 minutes long daily, right? And then they looked at the need for oral pain medication in the dog-exposed people compared to the no-dog group, right? And what do you think they found?
No, or little, or less
they
drug
claim,
use in the dog group.
They found the dog group needed 28% less pain medication than the no dog group.
And we know that's not surprising, right?
That doesn't surprise me, unless the dogs were slipping the patient's little little medication on the side. So the usual conclusions, interesting results, needs further study, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
So, but it's remarkable if that effect is real, if they could determine that in sort of a prospective study and get
and
some proper control groups.
Yeah, and long lasting.
Well, that's a good point, too.
You know, you have a dog visit, 5 to 15 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Brief exposure.
Brief exposure. 2 hours mm-hmm. later, you're still having the same amount of pain, or you don't care.
You're thinking about getting the dog hair off you so you don't ask for pain medication anymore or something like that. But truly, so this is going to be the basis probably for prospective studies. You'll need your control groups and all that kind of stuff. But
yeah.
It's intriguing, right?
Yeah.
And, of course, hopefully they're asking whether they want a visit from a dog. Let's say you don't like dogs so much. And here's your new treat. Here's your new friend. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
How much do you think a pelt, a coat, a skin of a bobcat goes for these days?
Well, oh, boy.
Well, there's a price on these things, and it's about $56.
That's it?
That's it. 75 cents for a possum. Beaver, $18.17 per pelt. And the reason why we know this is because in North Carolina, the trapping business is in experiencing a little mini resurgence after a general decline. And people are licensed trappers are just going after all these animals. And it is due to the increased demand from Russia and China wanting these pelts of the animals with the permission and encouragement of the North Carolina Wildlife Commission, which reports a 20% increase during the past several years to meet this demand.
Oh, that's so sad.
So these animals are being legally trapped with permission and encouragement, and this market is brisk.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
So it's incredible.
Happening right now. And there are beaver, mink, muskrat, possum, river otter, raccoon, skunk, weasel, and bobcat. Those are the so-called fur bearer population. Okay, this is the product. They are fur bearers. And also captured are coyote, gray fox, groundhog, nutria, and red fox.
Wow.
In this whole nasty industry. One person stated, who is with the Wildlife Commission, regulated trapping is the key tool used by the commission to proactively manage fur bearer populations so that they are in balance with people, threatened and endangered species, and the available habitat.
Oh, that's nonsense.
The position of the state.
That is nonsense.
So there you go.
And are they using the fur?
The fur is sold.
Fur is sold and then used for clothing, primarily.
Clothing or garments,
right.
or whatever they do in those
right.
countries.
Wow. Tragedy.
Yeah.
Just terrible. Thank you, Peter.
You bet.
And thank you for listening to Animals Today. This is Dr. Lori Kirshner encouraging you to nurture your love and compassion for the only other beings sharing our planet, the animals.
Opinions you hear on Biz Talk Radio are those of the hosts, callers, and guests, and do not necessarily reflect those of this station, Biz Talk Radio, its management, or advertisers. The information on Biz Talk Radio does not constitute a recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or service. If you have any questions about Biz Talk Radio, contact us at 817-274-1609 or at biztalkradio.com.